Welcome to Of the People. Thank you for joining us live. Death to America. That's right. Death to America. For those of you who are under a rock or perhaps watching the solar eclipse, there was on Al-Quds Day, which is, I think, the last Friday before the end of Ramadan in, of all places, Michigan, a large, very large protest rally, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protest rally, where you heard chants of death to America on U.S. soil. Erica Rollum.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Al-Mawti America!
Malcolm X said.
Okay. Those chants in Arabic are death to America. Okay. On U.S. soil. So the first thing is hate crime, anybody? But more importantly, because you realize that hate crimes are only important, or the allegations only occur when it's the conservative right that is saying something contentious that the left doesn't like. But in this case, you have death to America, right, on U.S. soil. We're not enforcing U.S. laws. There is, terrorists are clearly here, and that seems to be okay. My question is, where is the outrage from the American public? Have we become so numb and so just cavalier that on U.S. soil, you having people who support terrorism chanting death to America inside this country? How and why is that okay? Now, the other thing to keep in mind here, I know that we're now talking about Bill of Rights and the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech. But remember, the standard is established by Justice Wendell Oliver Holmes back in 1919, don't quote me on the year, was that you have free speech, but you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. That was then amended, by the way, somewhere in the 60s, I think 69, in the Brandenburg, Ohio decision, which basically says that you cannot say something that's going to foster an incitement to immediate violence, right? But if death to America is not incitement to violence, then I don't know what is. But there's a bigger picture at play here, because it's okay for the Democrats that, because they're pandering for votes for November. We've already established that. Don't forget, Michigan is also where there was the Muslim cleric who said it was okay to slaughter the Jews like sheep. But under the heading of death to America, I would argue that it's the Biden administration who's okay with death to America. Maybe not the same sense that this protester was talking about, but death to the way that America was, death to American values, right? We have open borders here. We have death to America. We have open borders. We have bankrupt the country. We're stopping forcing the laws. Let's keep going. All these things. If you don't enforce the laws, which is the last line of defense in a civil society, if you politicize the judicial process or you weaponize the judicial process, you are breaking down all the norms and all the values of American values that this country was established on. So let's be really clear here. Death to America on U.S. soil is unacceptable, and the fact that the public doesn't seem to care, or maybe the reason the public doesn't care is because the mainstream media isn't publicizing it, because I don't think you ever saw it on MSNBC or CNBC or CNN or any of the other news networks who clearly have an ideological agenda. But I would argue it's also the Biden administration that is pushing policies that is also bringing around death to America or the American way of life. I don't really see much difference. And freedom of speech, which we're a big supporter of, does not allow you to declare or call for fire in a crowded theater. But this comes down to the elections in November. Everything seems to be okay, including death to America on U.S. soil. Not okay with me. I think that it's time for America to take a stand. Open borders. If someone was coming into your house and was yelling death to your family, would that be okay? Then what's the difference between someone saying death to America in this country? It's not okay. And that's the monologue. Erica, makes me crazy.
Ooh-wee. It is really shocking to me. You know, of all of the things that we discuss on this show, you know, the all our where's the outrage stuff, the nonsense that goes on. The idea that there could be a rally in middle America calling for the death of our country, you know, people who have been welcomed here with open arms, people who claimed asylum, who were refugees, that they would repay our kindness and generosity with calls for the destruction of our country.
There's no difference between the squatters in New York and the Hamas supporters around the country, including obviously Michigan and Dearborn, which is what we're talking about. They're using the civil liberties embedded in our laws against us. Now, it presents a conundrum. Do you change the law? Because if you change the law, I believe it was Ben Franklin that said that if people are willing to give up their liberty for safety, they deserve and will have neither.
Neither.
And I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. So it is a conundrum. But again, a fish rots from the head down, to coin a phrase I grew up with in sort of, you know, the Italian neighborhoods in New Jersey, right? This starts with and ends with leadership. And the leadership out of D.C., because they have a political agenda to transform America into something else other than what it has been historically, is setting the precedent that this is okay. It's okay that they're not only is it okay that there are open borders and unfettered access, they're suspending federal law. There is federal law that's supposed to apply, but they're ignoring the laws that they don't like for a political agenda.
Well, yeah. I mean, what was it?
It's the same thing in New York with squatters.
Yeah. Saul Alinsky in Rules for Radicals. This is part of it, right? The only way you're going to bring down America is from within. And so whether it's, you know, funneling every young person through a college system that is going to indoctrinate them into being outrageous, stupid socialists, or claim this nonsense, this coexist nonsense that all religions are created equal. Let's be real, you guys. If those people in Dearborn, Michigan weren't Muslims, this would not be tolerated. If that was a group of Christians out there calling for death to something, death to America, if it was Jews, if it was anybody else out there, there would be outrage in the streets. We would be getting canceled. It would be a whole thing. But because people
it would also be reported on the liberal news outlets, which
correct.
This wasn't reported.
But we can't admit that Islam is a radical by nature, a radical religion that thinks that violence is okay, that says that things like that are okay, that you can go to somebody else's land property and wish for their death. Like, I can't do that as a Christian. There's nowhere in my Bible that says that stuff is okay. I know we share at least half of our scripture with y'all, Robert. I'm not sure where in
y'all?
I'm not sure where in, any Jewish literature it says it's cool to call for murdering people, unless you're
none
God.
None that I am aware of in the Torah or the Talmud. Not that I am an expert on either, by the way.
But we have to perpetuate this lie, you know, and that's part of the problem. Like, sorry, guys, obviously not all Muslims, not all people who are, follow Islam are radical people, but the reality is that they exist. And if we can't acknowledge that and admit that, right, this is another one of those unsayable things.
The broader issue really is violence in America. Violence in America now is okay. I mean,
yes.
I know that is a radical or controversial statement, but when you look around, and again, around the country, it's now okay for political violence. Now, a lot of this has to do, at least currently, with the Israel-Hamas war, or the Hamas war, as I call it, since Hamas is the one that started this, right? But now it's okay. It was okay for the Black Lives Matter protest to be mostly peaceful, which was a crock of shit, frankly, because they weren't. I mean, that's like kind of pregnant, right? You're either pregnant or you're not. you're either peaceful or you're not peaceful. This whole mostly, and folks, if you listen to our whole lead up in the show, you know, brash, irreverent, and mostly peaceful, that's a slap in the face meant to be intentionally at that whole concept. Well, you know, they're mostly peaceful. No, you're either peaceful or you're not, right? But go back to the 70s. The concept of political violence, which was really driven by the left, certainly in the 70s, right? You had the Weather Underground, you had the SDS, they were bombing, you know, the FBI building, and they were, I mean, think about the violence, and I'm old enough to have lived through that. This feels a lot like that. The thing that I start to rail against is, you know, before the show, I was doing some research, and you go through CNN articles and Reuters articles. The only thing that they're talking about is the radical right, the violence that's coming from the right. And of course, guess whose fault it is? Come on. I'll give you three guesses.
The federal government?
No. The media is blaming someone for all the political violence.
Who are they blaming? Trump. Oh, brother.
Right.
Yeah, everything is. Because nothing.
I can't believe it took you two times.
Okay, Robert, here's.
You should have got the first time.
Here's the thing you need to remember, okay? Time didn't start until Donald Trump announced he was running for president. I don't know if you know this, okay? It didn't exist before then. Nothing existed before then. It's like Cain and Abel.
By the way, could you imagine a protest where they were calling for death to America on U.S. soil if Trump was president?
Oh, God. Yeah, actually, I can. You know what? I'm sorry to be a jerk. I absolutely can. That really? All those Black Lives Matter protests, I understand he was in a no-win situation. If he had cracked down on those protests, they would have called him a fascist and they would have whatever. But he could have called up the National Guard while they were setting all these towns and cities on fire.
Perhaps.
Just saying.
So by the way, I'm looking at this article. This is a Reuters article, right? There have been, according to Reuters, and this goes back to a year ago, there were 213 cases of political violence identified by Reuters since January of 2021, attacked by supporters of former President Donald Trump, right? Killed 39 people, shooting of the five social justice protesters in Portland by a man on the far right. I mean, incidents of political violence, yet what they don't cover. Did you see at Stanford what happened? There was a student in Stanford who called for the assassination of Joe Biden. Where is that in the media?
Wow. And
folks, so the FBI, you guys can come visit me. I am not calling for the assassination of Joe Biden. I'm telling you that a student in Stanford, a 23-year-old Muslim student, let's see, who goes by the name of Hamza El-Budali, believes that President Joe Biden should be killed. I'm not calling for civilians to do it, but I think the military should do it. I'd be happy if Biden was dead.
That's a coup. He's calling for a coup. He's like...
So political violence. So the only political violence that's coming out in the country is from the right, which is just such a crock.
And wait, 213... incidents on the right. What about all the left wing? We know that Trump supporters were murdered in the streets. Are they not reporting that?
Of course not. And then you have Stanford University who says the following, that Stanford is committed to an educational environment in which Jewish students and all students can thrive and fully participate in the offering of the university in an atmosphere free of harassment and discrimination. We stand against anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim bias, and all forms of hatred. So death to America, right? That hatred is okay. And they'll say it's not on Stanford's university, but the truth is Stanford, Harvard, Columbia, MIT, Dartmouth, all of these Ivy League schools, and Stanford, I know technically is not Ivy League, but all these elite schools has been the breeding ground for all of this hatred. Think about it. It started with safe spaces where you can't have open discourse. And universities used to be, their mission was to teach you how to think critically. Now it's not to teach you how to think, but it's teaching you what to think. And they've really become these sort of indoctrination centers of the left, right?
Yeah.
So when Stanford comes out with this banal sort of cover your ass statement, my response is, but you guys are one of the prime reasons we're in the position that we are. You're to blame for this. Now, absolutely, America is also to blame, because America, you know, we were silent. We should never have been silent. We should never have allowed ourselves to be silent. But the violence that's being cited, and by the way, did you see what happened to the RV Trump guy in Jersey who just got beat with a sledgehammer? So there's a 64-year-old guy, 64-year-old guy in Jersey, my home state, 64-year-old guy, he's traveled the country, he's got a big RV, Trump sign, sells Trump, a memorabilia, sells all this stuff. Some 36-year-old kid from Philadelphia beat him with a sledgehammer and he had to be airlifted to the hospital. That's just last week. Tell me again who's responsible for the violence. Let's roll this video, because I want people to see this video. It's a montage. Erica, roll the tape.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
Biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
They're still going to have to go out and put a bullet in Donald Trump, and that's a fact.
Look, as his character is stabbed to death.
Where is John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
This way. That's it right there, pulling up.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
A Missouri state senator is under investigation by the Secret Service after saying she hopes President Trump is assassinated.
I will go and take Trump out tonight.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not.
If you think we're rallying now, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, so, yeah, real folks, bunch of right wingers in that video.
For those of you right. on the radio, there was Vice President Kamala Harris was in there, Maxine Waters was in there, a host of other celebrities and politicians, all calling for violence during the Trump years against Trump. I'm not going to make this argument for or against Trump. Like I said, Donald Trump's the nominee. He has my vote. If Nikki Haley was the nominee, she'd have my vote. I'd vote for my dog over the president administration. But tell me again, who is it that's calling for political violence here? That's the key. And by the way, the picture that people didn't see, the one where Kathy Griffin, the comedian, holds up a bloodied, severed Trump head, or the play where Trump was assassinated. Tell me again where the political violence is coming from and who's and where this has all started.
I want to see these people put together a compilation of famous right wing conservatives calling for death and destruction and assassination and all of that other stuff. And just for the record, just to prove what a bunch of hypocrite, stupid people these are, Don Lemon, who's black. For those of you who couldn't see, Don Lemon, who's black, was the person who said that the most dangerous people were white men in America. He married a white man.
Yeah, but he didn't. Well, but look, first of all, I'm sure he married a white Democrat. And what they're not talking about is white people in America. They said white people that are radicalized by the whatever, the something right, the reactionary right. So the other thing that people forget, you know how we like to connect the dots here.
Yeah.
The other thing that people forget is, where did all this really start? This really started with Obama.
Oh, yeah. Right? Michael Brown. Hands up, don't shoot.
Well, not only Michael Brown, but remember the Dallas Five, the five Dallas police. You remember the Black Lives Matter? You got to go back. I mean, people have short memories. Black Lives Matter starts these violent protests across the country. Excuse me, these mostly peaceful protests across the country, right? Resulting in, yeah, I keep going back and forth. I don't know what that is, but resulting in five Dallas police officers being assassinated. And rather than come out and call it, you know, the horrendous crime that it was, Obama equivocated. And he said, oh, you know, it's wrong. You shouldn't shoot the cops. But you have to understand where all this anger in the community is coming from. And, you know, those kinds of things, as opposed to condemning it. And that led to what? Defund the police, get rid of laws, the war on cops. And the war on cops, and when you defund the police and you ignore laws that you don't like, leads to what? More crime, leads to open borders because you're not enforcing federal laws. So do you starting to see the connected dots here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, it all goes back to this.
There was even, I've seen evidence to show that they were trying to, that they have been actively attempting to federalize law enforcement, all local departments, since the Obama administration, because they want more control. They want everything to be federalized, nationalized, socialized.
Right.
That is the goal. Defund the police isn't just about, you know, whatever is happening locally and, oh, we want to get people into social workers and whatever. No, it's about making it so that the federal government then has power and control over how policing is done locally. It's very dangerous, you guys. It's just more and more opportunities for the federal government to take power that it doesn't deserve.
I believe it was Ronald Reagan that said, government isn't the solution to the problem. Government is the problem. Right. And that's really the issue. So when we talk about, and I want to come back to what we talked about in the monologue, this whole concept of death to America, right? The chance of death to America are sort of, you know, the terrorists are here. And it's only a matter of time before there is some sort of terrorist event here. Everyone knows that. But there's another concept of death to America, which is this whole transformational thing that the Obama-Biden administration, or the Biden-Obama administration, because Obama's still running things, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Right?
It is trying to bring about, whether it's open borders, whether it's we talked about the weaponizing of the judicial system. I mean, have you ever seen this much incoming fire to a politician? I mean, think of all the things. I don't even want to get into this whole Trump argument, but the amount of fire that he's taking on the legal fronts, and people say that he deserves it. Really? This is a former president. If you can go after him for these trumped up charges, whether it's Letitia James or Fannie Willis, and again, let's see if I remember this correctly. Paula Jones accused Bill Clinton of
credibly,
and I forget the woman's name who accused Joe Biden of
is she still stuck in Russia?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Then
E. Jean Carroll, you know, and again, remember, folks, it's a civil trial. He was found guilty of, not a criminal trial. But
that's right.
No, but nobody went after Clinton, you know, for something that happened 30 years ago, or it actually wasn't even 30 with Paula Jones. So the hypocrisy and double standards is necessary ingredient in the cake of death to America. And it's death to America transforming America into something different than it is.
Yeah. So
tell me again about this political violence thing, and where is it coming from again?
So that's actually a really great point, Robert. What is the difference between chanting death to America and all of these left wingers running around saying how much we all suck and are racist and terrible? We're a bunch of colonizers and all this. I mean, isn't that ultimately the same chant, just with different words?
You got it. And that's my point. They both want death to America, but I think they would want to go about it in slightly different ways. I mean, death to America is if you flood America with illegal immigrants, right? If you break down the laws and you go and you defund the police,
break down our institutions,
and you break down our institutions, and you co-opt academia so that not only do the kids not understand the Constitution or how this country functions, but you radicalize them because, look, Hitler went after the youth for a reason, right? The Hitler youth movement, right? Because the young are impressionable, right? So where do you want to go get them? Go get them in academia. Yeah. Get them when they're young. So this is a generational issue. And the problem is, you know, we've been silent. And now when certain elements, you know, let's call it, you know, traditionalist, I don't want to say right or left, but, you know, with traditional values are starting to fight back in ways that they know how, whether it's to be vocal, sometimes it gets to physical altercations, it shouldn't, but sometimes it does. They're now the ones who are being accused of being radicalized because they're fighting for something they believe in against the norm, against the, I won't say the majority, but certainly the people that are in power and want to hold on to power at any cost.
Mm.
So I know we got to go to break.
Yes.
A little bit, right?
Yes.
I just want folks, tell me again where the political violence is coming from.
Mm. Well, I can tell you where it's not coming from. The Defenders of American Freedom over at ASIC.
America came into being based on a shared belief and a common set of values. Unlike other nations that were bound together based on common ancestry, race, or caste, we came into being based on a simple and shared set of ideals. That the power of government is based on the consent of the governed. That life, the freedom to live life on our own terms in our own way, free from government interference, and liberty, our most precious value, and the pursuit of happiness, which means we are free to pursue that which we choose, with the knowledge and courage to know that nothing is guaranteed to us in this life. Those values, America was founded on these basic inalienable rights. Freedom to pray to God in our own way. Freedom to think and speak freely without fear of punishment or harm. And freedom to gather in our places of worship and in our local taverns. And freedom to defend ourselves, our families, our homes, and our neighbors as we see fit. The American Center for Education and Knowledge is dedicated to protecting American exceptionalism anywhere and everywhere it is threatened. ASIC is a 501c3 and depends on your tax-deductible donations. Please help us continue our fight.
And we're back.
And we are back. So one of our listeners typed something that said, you know, it used to be that, you know, liberalism, as she calls it, was being pushed only in you know, upper education, meaning in college, and now it goes all the way down to pre-K.
Yep.
And it really does, right? I mean, when you think about CRT, right, and you think about DEI and diversity, equity, inclusion, which, Erica, let's see how well I've trained you. When you hear DEI, what does it really mean?
Division, intolerance, and,
The I's at the end. So division... No, Exclusion,
intolerance.
And intolerance.
Yeah.
Right. So this whole DEI stuff. And again, one of the core concepts here, and by the way, to the listener, thank you for the question or the statement. And yes, you are correct. But one of the concepts here, right, is that we've moved away from a fundamental, I mean, forget about personal responsibility, and that's important. Forget about your values. Not that's important. Don't forget about them. But there's a key concept that we have moved away from that is supposed to underpin all of this, and that word is meritocracy.
Oh, cut it out! You're a racist, sexist,
We both know.
You're an istaphobe. How dare you?
By the way, not only am I a racist, I'm a white racist, right?
Yeah,
the worst kind of racism.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But
golly.
But we used to strive to be the best. Competition used to be what it was about, not because, oh my God, someone's going to lose. By the way, my kids, you know, when they used to play soccer, we went to a game where they played without a ball once because they didn't want anyone to score a goal on the other team. Because they would feel bad about themselves.
That's not a thing. That did not happen. I don't even believe you. That is.
Yeah, they all ran around. They were really little. I'm telling you.
How do you play soccer without a ball? I don't even. Whatever. Well,
I mean,
whatever.
Isn't the point that they're not supposed to be winners and losers? Isn't that the point?
That is stupid. No, that is stupid. Human beings need competition to be successful. Human beings.
Well, but that's not what diversity, equity, inclusion, or critical race theory that's being shoved down.
Yeah, because those people are morons.
All right. Can we stop with the name calling here? Okay. Because first of all, you know, you always say that the other side or the people that are pushing this sort of transformative agenda on the country are stupid, and they're not stupid. If they were Erica, if they were stupid, they wouldn't be in the control position they are. So if you're going to call someone stupid, you got to call our side stupid for allowing this to happen.
Okay. So should I just call them evil? Terrorists?
Well, there's a word.
Demons?
There's a word. Okay. I don't even want to get into those labels. Okay. All right. This is about, we're supposed to be a country that's based on meritocracy, which means it's not equality of outcome, which is what we're now being forced to sort of swallow. It's equality of opportunity, right? And what you do with that opportunity determines whether you're successful, whether you're happy or sad, but it's all about a meritocracy, right? It's supposed to be about striving to be the best that you can be given the God-given tools that you were given to make the best of, you know, come hell or high water, right? I mean, that's what this is about. We have moved away from meritocracy. So the person, and by the way, you know, those plane parts that are falling off of all the Boeing jets? Folks, there is a direct result when you prioritize the color of someone's skin or their diversity in hiring as opposed to the best engineer going. I don't know about you. I'm going over a bridge. I want to know that the guy or man or woman or who, team that built that bridge are the best of the best. If someone's going to operate on me, you want the guy that finished at the bottom of his medical class?
I never, Robert, used to be afraid to get on a plane. I never used to, because it was like, okay, the only place I ever hear about planes going down is like if it's a little one or like in some foreign country. Now, like, I'm afraid to get on a plane. I'm afraid to get on a train. We've had all these train derailments. And
Erica, then you should stay in your house, because with all the violence that is starting to happen across the country, then you should be afraid to go outside too. But if you live by fear, then they just won.
Yeah.
Because isn't that really the goal here? Which is DEI, divide, right? Mm. The first thing is divide people. Make them compete against each other. We've talked about this. Blacks against whites, men against women, rich versus poor, sexual orientation versus sexual orientation. I mean, pick a fissure or dividing line. And if you keep people, if you do two things, if you keep people divided into small groups, let's call them tribes, right? You keep people only in their tribe and they fight against people in the other tribes, and you keep them so busy, i.e. poor, and preoccupied with just eking out a living, guess what they don't have time to do?
Fight the government?
They don't have time to fight the government. They don't have time to engage in the political process to bring about change.
Yeah.
And what the people who hold power, because we've talked about this till we're blue in the face, people who hold power, it's no longer right versus left, right? If you go to, I mean, and the political spectrum, folks, is not left or right. It's not linear. If you go too far to the right, you end up left. If you go too far to the left, you end up right. So therefore, it's not linear, it's circular, right? I mean, National Socialism, which was the formal name of Nazism, was considered to be a right-wing ideology. That, how do you have the word socialism in there? Because if you go too far, it's still about control versus liberty, right? So it's no longer left versus right or even left to right. It's top to bottom. It's the people that have the power want to keep it.
That's right.
And by transforming society, it makes it almost impossible for you to do that. I do want to get back to this whole concept of political violence, though.
Yes.
Because political violence is now the latest fear. You brought up the word fear, and I think it's appropriate, that keeps people in place. And what does it do? It keeps them so busy being scared or, you know, running around, you know, trying to not be scared because they're busy protecting themselves, right? Or they withdraw, then people are left alone, and the activists can bring about the change in society. There is no better example these days than, let's hate the Jews, right? Hating the Jews, Jew hatred is at an all-time high in this country, and it is now cool. It's now in vogue.
Fashionable.
Hate the Jews. The anti-Semitism is rampant in this country, and it's now okay. And people are going to say, oh, well, it's not okay. Really? Talk to me about what just happened at Rutgers. So the Rutgers Student Assembly was going to pass these, or had up for voting, these two anti-Israel platforms. One would be BDS, which was, you know, boycott, you know, divest and sanction. Yep. And then they wanted to decouple from Tel Aviv University. Even that wasn't enough because of the rampant anti-Semitism. What happens is these, I believe they termed them radical pro-Palestinian protesters, right? It wasn't enough that they wanted to boycott and divest and sanction Israel. They actually took over the meeting, and there were Jewish students there who were there just to petition the government for safety on campus. The president flees the meeting.
Wow.
The police had to be called in, and the Jewish students had to be let out by the back door for their own safety. Right. So, you know, and a trope from, you know, a trope from the 1960s, you want to talk about racism, you know, blacks to the back of the bus, Jews go out the back door for your safety. What's the difference? There is no difference.
Wow.
Right. There is no difference. So it's now cool. And by the way, where's the media? We talked about the Muslim cleric, and I forget his name, out of Warren, Michigan. We talked about it last show, who said that we are going to slaughter the Jews like sheep. It's okay.
And these are And that's right. Who we're supposed to be supporting. This is what's.
No. That's who Biden. Look, Biden wants to get reelected.
Yeah, that's who he's pandering to.
So he's pandering to a wing of the Democratic Party, the progressive wing, the AOC wing, the Hamas lobby, Rashida Tlaib, AOC. You know, Ian Pressley, who was in that other video we just showed.
Yeah.
Right. These are the people who are radically anti-Israel, radically anti-Jewish, and radically anti-America, because it all goes together. That's what they don't understand. So, I mean, and then you look at that student at Stanford who was advocating for the assassination of Biden. The reason he was advocating for the assassination of the president was because Biden was supporting Israel and, in his words, colluding with Israel, who was committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
So I,
do you see the connected dots here?
I'm trying to understand. Okay. One of the things that's so troubling about this genocide, this repeated use of things like genocide, is that there is no evidence that there is a genocide happening. Now, you may not like that people are dying, but if it were a actual genocide, millions and millions of people would be dead. The Israeli government could just carpet bomb the entire area and murder everyone if they really wanted to. And that's not what's happening. So when they're using rhetoric, right? So this is the whole thing, is you say things like Jews, Nazis, you know, right wingers are Nazis, punch a Nazi, right? So you start with all of this rhetoric that says political violence is okay, right? And then you use the most inflammatory, outrageous language that you possibly can to incense the people who are already upset, who are already feeling, you know, whatever. And now they literally believe that there is a genocide of Palestinians, so-called Palestinians, happening in Gaza. And I'm not saying that people aren't dying. I'm not saying that this isn't tragic.
Wait a minute. But Erica, first of all, if you can redefine racism to mean its opposite, if you can redefine words definitionally, structural racism, right, versus racism,
right,
all the crap that they throw at us, then you can redefine the word genocide.
Genocide.
First of all, I will tell you that as of yesterday, Secretary of Defense Austin just testified in front of Congress that they see no evidence of genocide, of Israel committing genocide in Gaza. That is juxtaposed to the United Nations Security Council, the United Nations Human Rights Council, that said that of the five tenets, T-E-N-E-T-S, meaning the five things that would classify as genocide, Israel has committed four of them, which is a crock of shit. Right. But
the UN, right, who allows people to sexually assault and traffic children. You want me to take whatever those people say seriously?
My point is that there is no Israel has painstakingly tried to avoid civilian casualties. It's not Israel that calls for the elimination, extermination of another people in its charter. It's not Israel that teaches their children to be suicide bombers. It's not Israel that uses hospitals and schools as human shields so that when there is an attack against the militants, that there are civilian casualties. It's not Israel that uses its civilians like pawns. It's not Israel that doesn't value human life on the same level, or that miscounts the numbers. And like I said, Secretary Austin, not a big fan of him by and large, because I think he's a woke Secretary of Defense. And I think that's one of the reasons I think the last number, by the way, is collectively the U.S. military, which is also being gutted as part of sort of this death to America transformational struggle or that's going on, or being foisted upon us. I think we're 41,000 members short collectively on our armed services of our recruitment goals. 41,000, but there's no evidence of it. But look, so I want to get back to this whole political violence, because again, even people who from CNN and other media outlets that would be classified as liberal say that the anti-Semitism, the hatred of Jews, Jew hatred, is at a proportion that they haven't seen since. You know, they have different years here, right? But I mean, it's been up 371%, and you know, we can go through most of this. But I mean, it's where's my numbers here? All right, because you know how numbers: 553 incidents since October 7th. By the way, actually, I take it back. Since from October 7th to January 7th, so we're not even counting March, February, March, or into April. There have been 533 incidents of vandalism, 60 physical assaults. More than 400 Jewish facilities in the United States received false bomb threats, 628 incidents involving Jewish institutions, including synagogues and community centers.
So in 3 months.
So open season on the Jews. But here's the thing. What people don't understand, and, you know, I was at this conference and someone asked, well, why do they hate the Jews? And I said, they don't just hate the Jews. I said, are you Christian? He said, yeah. I said, you're next.
They hate you too.
What they hate is Judeo-Christian values. The J comes before the C. They're going after the Jews first, smaller population, not as many, right? But the demonization you see, you know, coming from the government and coming from portions of the radical left to demonize Christianity.
It's all
connected.
That stupid broad. Oh God. Okay.
Did you just use the word broad?
Yeah, hold on. I got to collect myself because I'm about to
off. So Lord Benjamin's definition, Oxford definition. Is anyone looking at Oxford anymore?
Deliberate
genocide is the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group.
I mean, if you consider Hamas a group that deserves not being killed, I don't know.
Well, are you differentiating Hamas from the Palestinian people? And I'm not making that distinction, but at the end of the day, Hamas is a military.
It's a terrorist that launched organization.
I don't want to use the word terrorist organization because they're a militant or military organization, because to make them a terrorist organization is a cell. They were a coordinated military organization. Now, they may not be now after being decimated by Israel's response in the IDF, but they were.
They're basically a proxy of Iran. So if you, that is a, you know what, Robert, I will concur with your definition. I will.
Folks, write this day down. Erica and I agreed.
We agreed on something.
What's today's date? What's today's time? What?
Oh shoot. You know what? On that note, we're gonna hear from our sponsor. This is a perfect time to take a moment to thank our sponsor, American Center for Education and Knowledge. Y'all stick with us. We're gonna come back and talk more about political violence and crazy
other
people.
Things. Other
crazy
things.
Nutbags.
Socialism. The goal of socialism is communism. The world is quite familiar with socialism and the horrors socialism has brought with it. It wasn't that long ago. Actually, it's still with us. Socialism creeps into government slowly until it's too late. Socialism, the big lie. Yes, it could happen anywhere.
This educational video was brought to you by the American Center for Education and Knowledge and paid for by people like you who care about the future of our democracy. Please help us continue our work educating the American public and consider supporting ASIC by making a tax-deductible donation at asicfund.org.
When you look at October 7th and the unprovoked attack, right? For years, we through the UN and directly were sending money to the Palestinian Authority, to Hamas in Gaza, right? The Palestinian Authority, was in the West Bank. Mm. And it was quiet. And this unprovoked attack where women were babies were burned alive. There were genitalia cut off while people were alive. They're still holding hostages. When did it become okay to hold hostages, which you never hear about in the news, except when they talk about Israel and how Israel shouldn't go into Rafah because there's 1.3 million civilians there. Well, give up the hostages, folks.
That's been an offer the whole time.
It's a canard. And some of the hostages that have been released have talked about how they were and abused. And you never hear that in the media unless the only genuine media you now see is on the social media outlets, because it's relatively speaking, it's unfettered and it's not restricted. But you never hear about the hostages on CNN. You never hear about it on MSNBC. You rarely hear about it on Fox. There are American hostages still being held. How is that okay? Why are we not applying pressure? The hell with anything else. Get the American hostages back. Get all the hostages back. But if you're an American, does it not bother you? But I want to get back. But here's the point I'm sort of digressing. Here's what I have a hard time wrapping my head around. If those atrocities and attacks from October 7th, if you can't look at those and say that that was evil and call it evil, let's use the name, right? It's that old, definition of, Justice Potter Stewart about pornography, that I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. Well, I can't define evil, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
If you can't look at those attacks and the babies that were burned alive and the women that were and then have their genitalia cut off and then killed while they, if you can't look at that and if you can't call that evil, have we not lost our humanity?
But that's the whole point of the language change. Okay. Anything is justified if they're committing genocide against you. So this
one man's terrorist. So it's the ultimate relativism. Correct. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. That's correct. Crap.
Yeah. That's so crap. Because we're having a genocide committed against us. Any action. Yes.
We're having a genocide. We've redefined the term to make what's happening a genocide against us, so we can say there's a genocide and therefore anything we do is okay.
Justified. Correct. And that's why you can't hear. That's why they're not covering the hostages, the American hostages, because if they did, then it would create sympathy and there would be, and then the Israelis or the IDF would then be considered, they're going to save people. They're going to save our people. Well, you can't have that, because you need to make sure that Israel is demonized, divide.
If you're going to quote me right.
Denigrate.
Demagogue.
Demonize.
And divide.
Divide. This is what I mean. This is part of it, right? So we got to change the language.
Do you know where I came up with that? First of all, I made it up. That's mine. But you know where I came up with that? It was during the Obama years, because there was no greater demagogue in my lifetime. I mean, he reminded me of Huey Long, which if you go back to the old Louisiana governor, Governor Long, back in the early 1900s. But there's no greater demagogue. There's no greater demagogue than Barack Obama.
Demagogue in chief.
He would demonize his enemies, right? He would demonize, that's that whole, you didn't build that, right? There's nothing wrong with wealth, but we're going to spread it around a bit,
Yeah.
All that other banal nonsense. But at the end of the day, what I resent most about the Obama years, and we saw it coming, we did. What I resent most about it is two things. Is I never saw things in a colorized world, right? I would divide the world into two things. You're either a good person or you're a jerk, right? You're not, right? I don't care the color of your skin. I don't care if you're fat, you're thin, you're black, you're brown, you're yellow, you're pink, you're blue. I don't really care, right? You're a good person or you're not, right? Your word can be trusted or it can't, or it isn't. You're a man or woman of character or you're not. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. You have integrity or you don't. You have faith in God or you don't. And I don't care whether you call God Yahweh or, you know, or whatever, you know, Allah, whatever you want to call it. That's fine too. I don't care, right? I am non-denominational that way, right? Everyone, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, it's between you and God. And
as long as you know you're not God.
I sometimes may have a God complex, but no, I never think that I'm God, you know, because I'm Robert and I said so. But I resent the fact that now everything is viewed through the prism of race and you cannot take off the glasses of color if you wanted to. Yeah. It's impossible. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. That's the first thing that I resent in all of this. And the second thing I resent from the Obama years was the division that he sowed between every part of society, I would argue intentionally. And I think if you trace the path as to how we got here, politics is an imperfect thing, but if you trace the path on how we got here, and no president is perfect. I, you know, did a lot of work, you know, for the, you know, for President Bush, not directly, but meaning working, you know, within the political support firmament for him, ran the Jewish outreach for the country, all that other stuff, right? He wasn't perfect, right? No president is, right? None of them are, right? They're flawed, they're human, that's the way it is. But none of them, to me, were intentionally malevolent with intent to really harm, rip apart the country and transform the country than Obama did. And when you look at how we got here, I would argue Donald Trump's election was a direct result of people repudiating 8 years of Obama.
Oh, big
and then,
time.
And then those people from the Obama, the satellite of or orbit of Obama, who didn't like losing power, then sort of ginned up the machine to take down Trump and then gets us to Biden. But all of it goes back to the division in the country, the war on cops, the breakdown of law, going after law enforcement, and then seeding, meaning S-E-E-D as in planting, in local governments, people who are of like mind and quality to Barack Obama, the grand, you know, the great one, right? Of course, the grand community organizer. Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I mean, Black Jesus.
Well, you know, that's not someplace I,
but that's how people treat him. Like he was the freaking second coming. It's still stupid.
He's still running things, Erica. Now, Does anybody really think that the doddering old Joe Biden is running anything? I mean, come on.
No, well, that defies that.
I mean, you call people stupid. They're not that stupid. No one can look at this man and think he's running anything.
That's when the article you sent me about he's meeting with like prime ministers of foreign countries. Obama
Obama just met with the English prime minister.
I mean, that's outrageous. Yeah. What is he doing?
Right.
Sit down and shut up. Shut up. Go away.
Why? Erica, why do you think he's still in D.C.? Is there another president that's still in D.C. on a full-time basis?
No.
Ex-president, I mean?
No, that's what it traditionally.
George Bush isn't there.
They go
Clinton
away.
Isn't there.
When you are no longer president, your job is to shut up and go away.
And by the way, if you're no longer president, you go away. And if you don't go away, you can make the argument that you are still president. Just trying that on for size.
I'm just saying, where's my tinfoil hat?
Got it. I want to talk about election integrity. So, Erica, wait a minute. I want you to look up Executive Order 14019.
Executive Order
14019. So, basically, this was signed last year by the Biden administration, or Joe Biden signs the executive order, and it allows the federalization of get out the vote using the executive branch, using the executive agencies to make sure that people have voter access. But if you drill down into this, you know what this is about? This is, and again, This now, it's being challenged. We'll see if the Supreme Court takes it up.
Get me started on this. Get me started.
But again, under the, you know how they have these banal platitudes, right? About, well, shouldn't everyone have the right to vote? I mean, who's going to disagree with that? Of course, everyone should have the right to legally vote. But basically, it allows them to federalize the elections to forget out the vote. So they're going to go to nursing homes.
So unconstitutional. So unconstitutional.
The focus is on low-income minority and welfare voters, because who are they? They're obviously, you know, people of color. They're obviously Democrat. Most of them vote Democrats because they haven't left the Democrat plantation.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to go. They're going to go buy votes. These are folks who typically are getting government assistance. And so they're going to vote.
They're getting Obama money.
They're going to continue to vote to put their hands in other people's pockets and take their money. Of course, they're going to vote for that.
You're missing the point. The point here is that the federal government is inserting itself into get out the vote efforts on a federal election when the Constitution clearly states that the rights to conduct elections are strictly state rights. So you have various clauses. I mean, you know, the Constitution is clear that it's states' rights. And by the way, I want you to look this organization up. It's called DEMOS, D-E-M-O-S, because these are the people who worked with the Biden administration to have Joe Biden sign the executive order. And DEMOS is establishing a framework rooted in racial equity to amplify the new narrative around power. That's their mission statement. The key word there, ladies and gentlemen, being power. So you have third party, non-government organizations, NGOs, working with the administration as to how to maximize their voters to get to the polls to make sure they don't lose the election in November. And they're doing it through an executive order, which is executive order 140-019. So do you see the connected dots from the opening monologue of Death to America to the executive order 140? There's a theme here.
Yeah. And it's,
I sit here and go, I can't, you know, I'm not the Amazing Kreskin and I'm not the Wizard of Oz. How the hell is it that I'm the only one that sees the connected dots here?
Well, and this is what anybody who wants the federal, you should distrust anybody who calls for the federalization of votes. Anybody who says we should move to the popular vote, it's because they want stuff like this. They want to eliminate as many barriers to their control as possible. So if you are no longer in charge of your elections and voting and governance at the local level, and it's all done in DC, oh my God, we will never have a free and fair election again if this kind of stuff passes.
Well, by the way, for our listeners, certainly you should vote in the federal election. You should vote in every election you can. But yes, the key to stemming the tide and turning this back is not winning federal elections. The key is winning local elections.
That's right.
Whether it's your school board, start locally, because that's what the Democrats did starting in 2004, is they went local. They didn't start at the top, figuring the top's going to affect what's below it. They started at the bottom, and they started with mayoral races and state houses in various states, most of them that are now blue or purple, right? And they worked their way up, because not only is it cheaper and easier to win those elections because the votes are fewer, you're building a bench for the future, because those people who are mayors or district attorneys or town attorneys or whatever their political office,
committee members,
executive committee, right? Planning boards, all of that. They then go up the ranks over time. That's how we got here. But Erica, how am I the only one that sees sort of the connected dots in all of this? I mean,
you know,
I don't understand.
You're not the only one. Unfortunately, the American people are just absolutely checked out.
Death to America on American soil, and there's no U.S. reaction. That tells me America is checked out.
Federalizing elections. You've got them, canceling debt. They're coming for you. Okay.
They're not coming for your rights. Came, saw, conquered. The question is, ladies and gentlemen, what are you going to do about it? This is not like this is something that's happening. This is past tense. This has happened. We were asleep at the wheel. The question is, not, look, it's the whole concept of conservatism. How the hell do you conserve something you've already lost? You can restore it, but you can't conserve something you've lost.